The Ways and Means Committee will come to order. Rosa, please call the roll.
Chair McLean.
Here.
Vice Chair Buchanan.
Here.
Majority Whip Lamarca.
Here.
Ranking Member Escomani.
Here.
Representatives Bankson.
Here.
Barnaby.
Here.
Burfield.
Present.
Campbell.
Here.
Caruso.
Here.
Casello.
Here.
Daly. Duggan. Excused. Fabricio.
Here.
Fernandez Barkin.
Here.
Hart.
Here.
Hillebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Rayner Goolsbee.
Here.
Roach.
Present.
Robinson.
Here.
Roth.
Here.
Saroy. Excused. Smith.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Valdez.
Present.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Rosa. Members, I'd like to remind you to please silence your electronic devices, and members of the audience, please, as well. Members, at our last meeting, we didn't have an opportunity to do introductions, and so we're going to take a few minutes and do that. I do have a few members that have already told me that they need to scoot out a little bit early, so I'm going to recognize them first, and then we'll start from left to right or right to left or somewhere from that point. So, Rep. Rayner Goolsbee, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm so happy to be on Ways and Means, especially serving with our ranking member, Representative Escomani, who I think many of us know that she is the Ways and Means queen. It's the means to get to the ways or the ways to get to the means, whatever. This is my first time serving on this committee. I serve District 62, which is parts of beautiful Pinellas County. And it's Pinellas. I know other people might like to say Pinellas. It is Pinellas County and Hillsborough County. So parts of South St. Petersburg, Riverview, Brandon, and Gipsington. I think that the work that we're going to do on this committee is very, very important. Also, I see my good friend Will Robinson. We used to be in delegation together. I'm not going to start calling names because that's how you get in trouble. But I am happy to serve, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative. Now I'll recognize Representative Tant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Allison Tant, and I am delighted to be on this committee. I love the substantive work of this group. I represent District 9, which is Tallahassee. It also now has expanded into Jefferson and Madison. So I have two rural counties that are fiscally restrained and have different needs than a lot of the urban and larger counties. So I'm going to bring that voice to this work and look forward to working with each and every one of you. Appreciate you.
Thank you. And Representative Casello.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Joe Casello, and I represent District 90, which includes Palm Beach County and the great cities of Boynton Beach and Delray. It's a pleasure to be on this committee again, Mr. Chair, with you. In the past, we've passed the bill together as my co-prime sponsor, and I look forward to working with you on this committee, which I think is probably one of the more important committees here in this up here in Tallahassee. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Now, I guess, Representative Hart, why don't we just start with you? We'll finish down the front row and then come back to the back row.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm State Representative Diane Hart. I represent House District 63 out of Hillsborough County, some parts of East Tampa, Tampa Heights, Ybor City, University area. And I've been on this committee for the last 4 years. I am very excited to return. I'm grateful that the speaker saw fit to leave me here. This is a good committee. You get to see all the money and where every dime is being spent. So I actually love this committee. I look forward to working with you, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Chair McLean and committee members. And I am Susan Valdez, State Representative for District 64, proudly representing the Tampa Bay area in Hillsborough County. It is home of the Buccaneers. I love my Bucks and also the Lightning, but the Lightning is in Rep. Hart's district. So we have West Tampa Town and Country, Liberty City, the heart of Tampa. So I'm really excited being on this committee. This is my first time on this committee, so I'm looking forward to learning from you and others. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair McLean. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm Representative Rick Roth, District 94. If you go to the Florida redistricting website, you'll see that I have the largest district in Palm Beach County, most of unincorporated Palm Beach County. North boundary is the Martin County line, going all the way to Southern Boulevard, west of the Turnpike. My southwest border is the Broward County line. My western border is the Henry County line. And my, like I said before, my northern border is the Martin County line, serving a lot of rural areas and underserved people, and looking forward to great things under your leadership, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, and there will be a quiz on the boundary lines shortly. You're recognized, Representative Barnaby.
Thank you, Chair McLean. Thank you for having me on this committee, and good morning also to Vice Chair Buchanan and Ranking Member Escamani. I represent Volusia County, the west side of Volusia County, where the county seat for Volusia County is, the city of Deland, and I live in the city of Deltona. I also represent Lake Helen, Osteen, and the Spruce Creek Fly-In. So if you've got an airplane, you can live in the Spruce Creek Fly-In and fly your plane in, and I represent all the pilots there. I'm honored to be in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Tom Fabricio. I represent House District 110, which is in northwest Miami-Dade County. We have the communities of Palm Springs North, the Country Club of Miami. We have all of the town of Miami Lakes, and we have the northern sections of the city of Hialeah. I'm excited to be on this committee. First time on it, so I'll certainly be looking to dive in. Thank you so much.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Juan Fernandez Barquin. I represent House District 118, West Miami-Dade County, West Kendall. And I'm incredibly interested in property taxes. So that's why I requested to be here. Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair McLean. It's an honor to serve with you and Vice Chair Buchanan and Ranking Member Escamani. My name is Spencer Roach. I represent the newly reconfigured House District 76, which includes parts of Lee County, about half of Charlotte County, and all of DeSoto County. Look forward to serving with my colleagues here, and wanted to thank every member here for their condolences. Last week, I had the last time we were meeting, I had a medical emergency, could not make the meeting. This is my first time here, so thank you to everyone for your well wishes. And to those who are rooting for my demise, I'm sorry to disappoint them, but I somehow made it back here. Look forward to serving. Thank you, and good morning.
Poor boy. Representative Sam Killebrew, District 48, which is the southeast corner of Polk County. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for inviting me.
Good morning, everyone. I'm State Representative Mike Caruso, District 87. I serve the constituents from Manalapan, Hypoluxo, to Jupiter along the east side of Palm Beach County. I'm excited to be here. It's my fourth year serving on the Ways and Means. I don't know where we can, I know the odds are 3-1 of Representative Roach's demise, but and I just don't know where to place my bet. But I'm excited to serve here again. I enjoy the work we do. I look forward to the Chair's leadership and Vice Chair Buchanan's leadership to come.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's Kimberly Burfield. I represent District 58, which extends through the beaches, incorporates Clearwater, Dunedin, the town of Bel Air, Bel Air Bluffs, Bel Air Shores. So it's a beautiful area. If you ever want to come visit, come join me. I look forward to the opportunity to serve with you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate this chance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chip LaMarca, I'm privileged to be the committee whip in this committee. I reign from District 100 in beautiful Broward County. I serve the cities of Deerfield Beach, Pompano Beach, Hillsborough Beach, Lighthouse Point, Lauderdale-by-the-Sea, Sea Ranch Lakes, and Fort Lauderdale. And I have the privilege to have served as a county commissioner with our chairman. He was a county commissioner, so we both keep local government in our hearts, but I'm looking forward to doing the important work here.
Thank you, Chairman McLean, and to the leadership. It is a privilege to be a part of this committee and on the team. My name is Doug Bankson, and I serve District 39 in Orange and Seminole County, right in the center of the greatest state in the union. I believe fiscal responsibility is absolutely key for our longevity, and it's a privilege to be a part. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. James Buchanan, representing Sarasota County, unincorporated parts of Sarasota County, parts of Venice, and parts of Northport. And I got to tell you, Mr. Chair, I'm very excited for some of the things that we're going to be doing in this committee. Look forward to serving under your leadership, working with members on this committee. And I can tell you, it's probably one of the most exciting first days on the job during that special session. So that's probably just a start of what's to come. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm Stan McLean. I'm House District 27, which is parts of Marion Lake in Volusia County. That's Volusia and Lake are new to me. And then it's certainly my honor to be able to be the chair of this committee. And there is a lot of important work to do this session. We'll be looking to maybe extend some tax holidays. Provide more tax relief to the citizens of the state of Florida. Obviously, when we were here for special session, I think we did a great job of putting together a robust package to help those that had been affected by the hurricanes, and without really affecting the rest of the budget, if you will. In other words, the budget we'd already set, we didn't really affect that. We found dollars to be able to provide that relief, and I think that, you know, that was important work for us. We codified some things into statute that would help us as we move forward anytime, you know, we have natural disasters. But I actually served on Ways and Means in my first term, and actually Speaker Renner was the chairman of this committee, and so I had an opportunity to serve under that. I, too, you know, coming from local government, I've always been concerned about taxation and, you know, how it affects the, you know, our citizens and the decisions that we make. And so I'm really excited about being able to chair this. I've served with some of you on other committees. My style will be pretty, I'm pretty lenient till you go too long, and then I'll have to cut you off. But, you know, I try to make sure that you all get all your questions answered, and certainly that you're able to make comments, you know, and those kinds of things. So I look forward to working with all of you. I'm excited about, you know, the members that are on here. Y'all bring a wealth of experience from all different backgrounds, and that always makes for good public policy at the end of the day. And that's, you know, that's what we should be striving to do. And then certainly finding ways to provide tax relief or whatever it might be. So I'm looking forward to this. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ranking Member Escamani.
Well, thank you so much, Chair. I think you did a great summary of just why this committee is so important. And again, my name is Anna V. Escamani. I think everyone here knows me. I'm proud to serve as the ranking member in this committee, and actually was appointed to this committee my freshman year back in 2018, not by choice, but by chance. And I never thought I would be in a tax committee. Candidly, I did not come to legislature thinking I would master this subject. But to the chagrin of some people in the audience, I have really enjoyed this committee that I've requested it every year. And I'm proud to now be the ranking member, my second term serving as ranking member with Chair McLean and now Vice Chair Buchanan and our new whip. There are so many Republicans in the House that now this committee has a whip, which is a larger conversation for another day. But really grateful for this committee because this is not a partisan committee, members. This is a committee where we get to debate tax issues that impact the working person, that impact our businesses in a way that is not partisan, but just focused on what is good government. And so I'm really grateful for the chance to serve in this space, to have those debate of ideas, and appreciate just the emphasis for those that have an interest, whether it's property taxes, whether it's the TDT, whether it's sales tax, corporate tax. This is a place for us to go into the weeds to figure out what makes the most sense for consumers and how can we put money back into the pockets of everyday Floridians. My district is uniquely placed. I'm in Central Florida, so we are a huge revenue generator for the state when it comes to sales tax. And of course, I'm also home to the City Beautiful of Orlando, Winter Park, Belle Isle, Edgewood, and now Maitland and the historic town of Edenville. And every economic class of person lives in my district. So I do try to center those needs, those very diverse needs of our state, when I have the honor of sitting in this chair next to everyone here. So thank you so much, Chair, and I'll pass it to my colleague, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. And so I'm Representative David Smith. I represent the people of House District 38 in Seminole County. Although this is my third term in the House, this is my first opportunity to serve on Ways and Means. I know the members will understand when I say that I used one of my three asterisks to be able to sit on this committee, because it's an important committee at an important time in Florida's history. I think we will take some bold steps, as the chairman alluded to maybe put some more money back into the pockets of working families in Florida and keep an eye on the way we do taxes. That's really why I wanted to be here, especially this year. So thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. Good morning to the audience. My name is Daryl Campbell. I represent District 99, which I share. That's Broward County. I share with our whip here, Rep. LaMarca. It's an honor to be here amongst you to learn more about Ways and Means. When you're appointed to committees, you pick your committees, and you know the ones that you're going to get, and then though you have your unexpected, and so I'm proud to say this is my unexpected committee, and I'm excited to learn and to serve with you all here, and really figure out what we can do to better make Florida as we move on into this next session. So thank you for having me, and thank you. I look forward to working with y'all.
Good morning. It is still morning. Good morning. My name is Will Robinson. I represent House District 71, which, if you cut Manatee County in half, it's the western portion. I'm serving in my third term, and this is my first year in Ways and Means. I'm excited to serve under your leadership, Mr. Chairman, and, of course, I'm excited for being on a committee with the ranking member as well. So looking forward to the next year, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, members, for your introductions. Now we'll... I'd like to introduce our committee staff director, who's Vince Aldridge, sitting up to my right here. Vince has a bachelor's and master's degree in accounting from Michigan State University and the University of South Florida, respectively. He also has a law degree from the University of Florida. You can see he's an underachiever. Vince has worked at the PSC and in various roles at the Department of Revenue, ranging from attorney to chief of staff. He was an attorney for this committee from 2009 to 2013, and then he rejoined the committee in 2015, and Vince was named staff director in 2020. Vince, would you introduce the rest of the staff, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me start with Rosa Dorsey. Rosa is the committee administrative lead. She's worked in state government for over 35 years in an administrative capacity. And she's been with the House since 2006. She came here from the executive office of the governor. Kimberly Berg is an attorney. She's got a bachelor's degree in humanities from the University of Central Florida. She's got a law degree from the University of Florida and an LLM specializing in taxation from the University of Florida. Following a stint in the private sector, Kimberly spent 6 years at the Department of Revenue in a variety of capacities, most recently as the agency's rulemaking coordinator. Kimberly joined the committee staff in March of 2019. Alexandra Latore. She's a policy analyst. She has a bachelor's degree in economics and international affairs from Florida State. Alexandra worked as a senior economist at the executive office of the governor before joining the committee staff in October of 2021. And then finally, Catherine McCain has a bachelor's degree in history from Florida State University. She's got a law degree from the University of Alabama. She started her career as a prosecutor and then spent 3 years at the Department of Revenue focusing on property tax issues in the general counsel's office there. She joined the committee staff in October of 2021 as well.
Thank you, Vince, for those presentations. And certainly, members, you can see that there's a wealth of knowledge by the staff, the members of the staff here. And I do want to make a note that none of them are available for personal consultation on tax matters. but now we'll move on to a presentation by Ms. Berg, and she's going to give us an overview of the committee's jurisdiction, some of the recent activity, and the overview of state revenues. And because this is our first committee cycle, I thought it was important. Some of you probably have seen this presentation. Some of you that have been on the committee will have seen the presentation and maybe have a better understanding of some of this. But I thought it's important for the new members to be able to get a feel for what we do, what's been done, and some of those types of things. So, Ms. Berg, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair McLean. It's wonderful to see all of you this morning. Welcome, members. I'm glad some of you are interested in getting in the weeds, and some of you are here for the overview. I think you're going to get a little bit of both today. I'm going to go ahead and start with a quick outline. Today, we're going to give you an overview of the Ways and Means Committee, including the committee's purview, the types of bills you're likely to hear in committee and that have been heard in recent years, and some sample tax policy issues that came before the committee recently. That's going to hopefully give you a feel for what you may be considering this year. Then we'll pivot a bit, and we're going to talk some about the state's revenue streams, where money comes from, what growth we expect to see in the next few years, and then some details on the major revenue streams, specifically general revenue and then a couple of the bigger trust funds. But first, here's a look at what Ways and Means does. We're going to go ahead and start with the committee's jurisdiction. The purview of the Ways and Means Committee includes all state and local taxes, things like sales tax, corporate income tax, insurance premium tax at the state level, things like local sales taxes and ad valorem property tax at the local level. It also includes some non-tax revenue sources, things like certain fees. In general, the committee addresses statutory and constitutional policy regarding tax rates, tax-based design, like what kinds of things are taxable, and collection and enforcement parameters to provide guidelines for agencies, governments, and taxpayers. The committee may also address some debt financing policy and miscellaneous revenue issues, like gaming revenues. The committee's work may entail activities such as easing tax administration burdens for individuals or state and private entities, or enhancing enforcement capabilities to ensure an even playing field for all taxpayers. In addition, committee staff, in particular our staff director, Vince Aldridge, represents the House of Representatives on the Economic and Revenue Consensus Estimating Conferences. This slide gives you a big picture of the types of bills heard in committee over the last five sessions. As you can see, the largest segment of bills we typically hear in committee are local or local-related bills. Local bills, that dark blue segment representing 22% of all bills, are bills specific to one local government, things like bills creating or dissolving a municipality, expanding a water or sewer district, or otherwise making specific changes to an individual government. These typically go through the Ways and Means Committee if they have a funding element under our purview, something like ad valorem authority, a special assessment authority, or bonding authority. Local taxes and fees, administrative or procedural, are bills that focus on how all local governments of the same type impose or administer local taxes and fees. These might be things like ballot requirements for a local option sales tax referenda, or truth and millage trim procedures for ad valorem taxes. Local taxes and fees, that largest segment of the chart at 38%, is a category overwhelmingly related to ad valorem property tax, things like clarifying a charitable exemption from property tax or joint resolutions to modify homestead exemptions in some way. This category can also include other local taxes and fees, things like discretionary local option sales surtax issues, special assessments, impact fees, and tourist development taxes. These bills might change how taxes can be spent, create new categories of taxes, fees, or assessments, or phase out an existing tax or fee. Debt financing issues primarily include bonding issues. They're relatively uncommon, but can provide requirements or procedures related to local government or state bonding. State taxes and fees, while only 17% of this chart, please keep in mind that these bills have a very direct impact on the state. These are bills that affect statewide taxes, things like sales tax, corporate income tax, or insurance premium tax, among many others. These bills frequently affect general revenue, so in addition to considering whether the bill is good policy from the committee's perspective, you may also need to consider the fiscal impact to the state. The other category tends to be topics that only slightly relate to our jurisdiction, but may still come up. Things like public records exemptions for taxpayer data held by a tax collector, changes to the Florida Trust Code, or maybe state investment policies. That last little bitty wedge is the tax package. The last several years, the committee has had a proposed committee bill that addressed a number of tax-related issues in one larger bill. As the bill moves through the legislative process, it is frequently but unofficially referred to as the tax package. These are the bills, for example, that typically contain the sales tax holidays. I'm going to now talk about some of the tax policy issues that have been in those bills that the committee has seen over the last few years. And I'm going to start with sales tax holidays because everybody loves them. The committee has included several sales tax holidays in recent committee bills, including the now familiar back-to-school sales tax holiday, typically held in July or August right before students are going back to school. Last year, it was a full 2 weeks. As well as the disaster preparedness holiday, that's one right before hurricane season starts to try to encourage people to prepare to either evacuate or hunker at home as needed. Last year, the committee expanded that to include pet evacuation supplies at the request of a Tampa Girl Scout troop. There were also two new holidays created during the last administration. The tool time tax holiday on hand tools, work boots, and other supplies needed for home improvement or apprenticeship programs that was held around Labor Day last year. And then Freedom Week, a recreation-focused holiday held around the 4th of July, which encouraged Floridians to get out and enjoy Florida. Freedom Week exempted everything from pool and boating supplies to admissions to concerts, movies, live sporting events, museums, and state parks, plus exempted camping, fishing, and general outdoor supplies to enjoy natural Florida. My personal favorite item was binoculars for birdwatching. The committee also passed longer-term but still temporary sales tax exemptions on a number of important items last year. For example, there was a 3-month summer reading exemption on children's books, a 1-year exemption on children's clothes, shoes, and diapers, a 1-year exemption on certain Energy Star efficient appliances, and a 2-year exemption on impact-resistant windows, doors, and garage doors to encourage home hardening against hurricanes and other natural disasters. In last year's tax package, the House also passed a 1-month exemption for state motor fuel taxes. In the last 5 years, as you already know from December, the committee has also passed bills related to hurricane relief and recovery, things that involve sales tax, property tax, and sometimes fuel tax. In 2018, shortly after Hurricanes Hermine, Matthew, and Irma, there were things like a fuel tax refund for certain agricultural transportation, property tax relief for homestead and agricultural properties that were damaged, sales tax refunds for fencing and building materials used in agricultural repairs, and as you may recall, there was a sales tax exemption for generators used at nursing homes. In 2019, there was property tax relief for agricultural equipment damaged or made idle from Hurricane Michael, flexibility on timing and payment of property taxes, refunds of property taxes paid on homestead properties rendered uninhabitable, and refunds for fuel tax paid for agricultural shipment or debris removal from counties affected by Hurricane Michael. Last year's tax package created a new permanent provision allowing refunds of property taxes paid on homestead properties that were rendered uninhabitable due to natural disasters beginning in 2023. Unfortunately, we had natural disasters before 2023, so as you all remember in December, there was also a bill that you heard during that special session that allowed refunds of property taxes paid on homestead properties rendered uninhabitable due to Hurricanes Ian and Nicole. There are also a number of credit programs that the committee is likely to hear about or has looked at over the last few years. The first is the Community Contribution Tax Credit Program. This is a program that offers tax credits to businesses or persons that contribute to certain affordable housing or community development projects, things like Habitat for Humanity. The program was established in 1980 and has been scheduled to expire several times. After extending the program temporarily, the legislature made the program permanent in 2017 with a $14 million cap. The legislature then provided one-time cap increases in certain years, most recently from $14 to $17 million for fiscal year 2019-20. However, the legislature permanently increased that cap from $14 million to $19 million last year in the tax package. The Contaminated Site Rehabilitation Tax Credit Program is commonly referred to as the Brownfields Tax Credit Program. It's a program that provides corporate income tax credits for businesses that voluntarily clean up polluted or contaminated properties. The program initially had a $2 million cap, which is currently $10 million. This is a unique program, though, in that anything over that $10 million in a specific fiscal year automatically gets rolled over and counts toward the next year's $10 million. As you can imagine, after a few years of those rollovers, quite a backlog tends to build up. The legislature in the past has approved one-time increases to address that backlog. Most recently, $18.5 million above or an additional 8.5 for a total of 18.5 million in fiscal year 2018-19, and from 10 to 27.5 million in 2021-22. There are also three new credits that have come into play in the last couple of years. The New World's Reading Initiative tax credit was created 2 years ago, and this program allows credits against multiple taxes for contributions to the children's book delivery program created by our last speaker. The cap this year for this program is $30 million, and it's scheduled to increase to $60 million for the next fiscal year and thereafter. The Strong Families tax credit was also created 2 years ago. This program allows credits against multiple taxes for contributions to certain nonprofit entities designated by the Department of Children and Families that are focused on child welfare and child well-being. The program currently has a cap of $10 million a year. The Short Line Rail tax credit was created in last year's tax package. This is a program that allows a credit against corporate income tax for certain expenditures made in Florida by Class 2 or Class 3 railroads to repair or replace railroad infrastructure. This credit is a percentage of their investment in the state and is limited by the number of rail miles owned or leased in Florida. The goal here was to try to help with moving cargo around. You may remember that there were some supply chain issues in the not too recent past. The hope was that this would help ease that. Then we get into ad valorem and property tax. Issues often take the form of HJRs or House Joint Resolutions that put proposed constitutional amendments on the ballot for voters when you're talking about property tax. This is necessary because so much of property tax law here in Florida is rooted in our Constitution. If you've ever asked our staff director a question about changing a property tax provision, Vince's first response was probably some version of, we'll need to think about whether that would require a constitutional amendment. This committee has seen a number of proposed constitutional amendments in the last few years, four of which did go before the voters. In 2020, there was a provision to increase the period during which a person may transfer their Save Our Homes benefits to a new homestead property. It was 2 years. This would change that to 3 years. There's also a provision allowing a homestead property tax discount to be transferred to the surviving spouse of a deceased veteran. Both of those did pass when they went before the voters in 2020. In 2022, you may recall, there was a provision that would have provided an additional homestead tax exemption for non-school levies of up to $50,000 of the assessed value of homestead property owned by classroom teachers, law enforcement officers, firefighters, paramedics, and other similar critical workers. There was also one that would have allowed the legislature to exclude improvements to residential property made to improve the property's resistance to flood damage from being included in the assessed value of the property for ad valorem purposes. Neither of those were approved by voters. Hopefully that gives you kind of a good feel for the types of bills and types of issues the committee can see or may see over the next couple of years. So now that we've talked a little bit about what the committee is and does, I'd like to pivot and give you a brief overview of the state revenue streams to give you a feel for how we pay for all those things and all of those bills. In this part of the presentation, we want to give you both a historic perspective and current forecast for some major state revenue funds in the coming years. The hope is that this will give you some practical financial context for the work this committee will be doing. We do not have time to address all the revenue sources today. You'll see shortly how very many there are. So the focus here is going to be on the General Revenue Fund, and then we'll end our discussion with a couple of other major trust funds, namely the Educational Enhancement Trust Fund and the State Transportation Trust Fund. To start our conversation on GR, I want to kind of focus on how general revenue fits into the overall budget picture. This slide is intended to show you at a high level the various sources of state revenue that are included in our annual appropriations bills. As you can see, about 36% of the state revenue comes from the federal government. This includes things like federal money from Medicaid, federal dollars we receive for transportation projects, and federal money we receive for education. Trust fund revenue represents about 26% of our state revenue. Major trust funds include things like the State Transportation Trust Fund, which is funded largely by motor fuel taxes and motor vehicle fees, the Educational Enhancement Trust Fund, which gets revenue from lottery sales and slot machine tax revenues, and the State School Trust Fund, which primarily gets its revenue from sales of unclaimed property. General revenue, or GR, is that blue segment on the upper right, and it is actually the largest piece of this pie. It represents about 38% of all state appropriations. This slide gives you a quick look at general revenue for the last 20 or so years, both the history of actual collections and the most recent forecast from the Revenue Estimating Conference for the coming years. The green top line shows you the total general revenue in a given fiscal year, and the blue columns at the bottom show the amount of change year over year. The most prominent features you may see in this history are the run-up between 2004 and 2006, and then the collapse from 2007 to 2009 as a consequence of the Great Recession, along with the dip in GR experienced in fiscal year 1920, resulting from the impact of the pandemic, and then the sharp growth since then. Since the crash in the mid-2000s, you can see that before the pandemic, we had about 10 years of pretty steady uninterrupted growth until 1920. You can also see how quickly, though, we have rebounded faster than that original growth rate in 2021 and 2022. The forecast is the portion of the chart to the right of the vertical black line, and you can see that the forecast expects growth to return at a fairly steady rate in fiscal year 23-24, similar to the period leading up to the pandemic, after a slight dip sometime in 22-23. This slide shows the annual percentage changes embedded in the previous chart. The variability is a little more apparent when you're looking at those percentage changes. You can see the run-up in recession, the pandemic impacts, and then the historic growth since the pandemic. The main point to take from this is that once we get past any potential dip in 2023, as we get back to a more normal sales tax collection baseline, we expect modest growth in the few years thereafter. Now that we've seen what we expect general revenue to do in the next few years, I want to show you what's in general revenue. Taking a step back, this pie chart shows where GR comes from. These are the recurring components of general revenue. If you're like me, the first thing you see is the big blue Pac-Man of sales tax, accounting for just over 74% of the total, with the corporate income tax coming in a very distant second place at 10.6%, and documentary stamp tax in even more distant third place at 3.9%. You can see how many different things do flow into GR, though, even if their share is small. The remainder of the things are a really varied group and include highway safety taxes and fees, corporate filing fees, insurance premium taxes, severance taxes, and alcoholic beverage and tobacco taxes. Each one of these slices of the pie chart shows a path through which economic activity and behavior can move revenues here in Florida. With that in mind, we're going to take a look at the collections chart from a couple of slides ago with some things broken out a little differently for you. As before, this chart shows total GR collections with that top line, but it also displays collections for the four largest recurring components of general revenue, represented by the stacked shaded areas. The big blue portion on the bottom is sales tax, as you would expect, much larger than everything else. The other components showed are the corporate income tax in gray, real estate-related taxes in light blue, and the insurance premium tax in navy. The unshaded area under the top line represents all of the other sources combined. If you're wondering, real estate-related taxes are the combination of documentary stamp taxes and the intangibles tax, both of which are closely related to movements in real estate markets. The main point here is to understand the overwhelming importance of sales tax, both as a share of the total, but also as the primary source of growth in general revenue. This is where I feel like it gets a little in the weeds, so I'm sorry in advance. I want to end our discussion about general revenue by pointing out what may be obvious to many of you, that Florida's state revenue streams, all that money coming in on the previous slides, is directly connected to Florida's underlying economy and the economic activity in the state of Florida. As most of you know, here in Florida, we have a consensus estimating conference process that is specifically meant to assist the legislature in the planning and budgeting process. The Economic Estimating Conference meets periodically to adopt both a national economic forecast and a Florida-specific economic forecast. Key state economic variables, or drivers, are then used to model the likely path of individual revenue sources and resource needs. This slide identifies some of the major economic variables that are key to forecasting Florida's revenue sources, things like sales tax and corporate income tax. This table also displays the forecasted growth rates over the next 6 years for those key variables. To kind of show how these are related, I want to walk you through how these drivers interact with some of the taxes we've looked at on earlier slides. Starting with, of course, sales tax. The sales tax base, as you know, embodies a wide variety of transactions and activities. And at a very high level, you can probably guess how some of these key drivers connect to sales tax. Some of the most important ones, of course, are population, inflation, real per capita income, and tourism. Population over the next 6 years is projected to grow 7.8%. Each new person into the state brings demand for goods and services, many of which are subject to sales tax. Things like food, restaurant meals are taxable. Clothing, almost always taxable. Shelter, building materials are taxable. entertainment, most forms are taxable. And transportation, motor vehicles are generally taxable. Expanding demand for goods and services, even if they're not directly taxable, often also leads to expansion in the size and number of businesses, which are often subject to their own set of sales tax transactions, business rent, electricity, machinery and equipment. The next one that's kind of at play here is inflation. This is another driver that really directly does impact sales tax. As you know, sales tax is value-based. It is 6% of the cost of something. So changes in the price of taxable items because of inflation will change the underlying tax base. I will note that while the overall consumer inflation is expected to be 17.2 over this period, most likely the inflation for sales taxable items will be somewhat less than that. In any event, though, increases or decreases in inflation do tend to affect the sales tax. Real per capita income, for those of you who are unfamiliar with that phrase, it's income per person after accounting for inflation, is a driver more connected to the job market, which is in a steady state throughout the forecast period. Beyond population growth and price increases, increases in household incomes also expand demand for goods and services, some of which are taxable and all of which typically lead to business growth. The real per capita income is expected to increase about 6.7% over the next 6 years. And then tourist visits. Tourism has long been one of Florida's most significant industries and is an important driver for some sales of taxable services, such as admissions to entertainment venues, lodging, rental cars, and food and drink establishments. You can see that tourist visits are expected to grow a robust 23.8% over the next 6 years. Beyond sales tax, I'm going to touch on just a couple other areas that are affected by these drivers. For real estate-related taxes, the real estate activity measure shown on this table is the most important thing that we'd be looking at. It's the product of the estimating conference's forecast for existing single-family home prices multiplied by the number of single-family home sales during this period. It should be a reasonable gauge of real estate activity in the coming years that will drive both the documentary stamp tax and the intangibles tax. While at this time the conference has not forecasted any decline in the value of homes, you probably have already noticed that the number of sales are slowing considerably across most of the state. And then for corporate income tax, the expected growth in corporate income tax itself is about 19% over the next 6 years. The major driver for this, as you would expect, is U.S. corporate profits, which is a 21.7% forecasted increase over that period. Hopefully that's giving you some good insight into what goes into general revenue, what we expect the collections to do over the next few years, and what economic variables the estimating conferences use when they're trying to forecast those changes. Beyond general revenue, there are a couple of very large state revenue trust funds that are important that I'm just going to touch on very briefly for you. The Educational Enhancement Trust Fund is dedicated to a variety of educational programs. It's a lot of operational funding for all levels of education. This is where Bright Futures scholarships are paid out of. And there is also some servicing of state-issued bonds related to education. The two main revenue sources for the EETF are proceeds from the state lottery and taxes on slot machine revenues. In the chart, the blue area, the big blue area, is the lottery revenues. They are the original and by far the dominant revenue source for this fund. In the lottery's first year, 1988, $234 million was sent to the Educational Enhancement Trust Fund. This has grown to about $2.2 billion now. That's an increase of 940%, far in excess of growth in Florida's population or economy over that period. The chart also shows, in gray, the taxes on slot machine revenues. Those are, to be clear, only allowed at certain facilities in Broward and Dade counties. The beginning of that tax was in 2006, and the revenues for that have now exceeded any pre-pandemic revenues and are forecasted to continue growing at a pretty steady pace. One final major revenue trust fund that I want to mention here is the State Transportation Trust Fund, or the STTF. As suggested by the name, this is the state's primary source for transportation infrastructure spending. The chart shows that there are two main groupings of revenue sources for this trust fund. Fuel taxes, the blue area, account for almost two-thirds of the revenue to the STTF. Motor vehicle-related taxes and fees, the gray area, is that next biggest segment. Then there is a third, much smaller portion at the top that mainly consists of the $2 per day rental car surcharge. These revenue sources are largely unit-based levies, meaning the amount charged isn't tied to the price, just to the amount sold. Consequently, they tend to grow slowly, more in line with population growth. The exception to this is the state's main fuel taxes. While technically unit-based, you pay a certain number of cents per gallon, for example, that unit rate is automatically indexed to CPI, and so every year that's going up a little bit as CPI goes up. The chart shows that total state transportation trust fund revenues are forecasted to grow over the next 6 years about 17%, or $719 million. Not surprisingly, given their indexed nature, fuel taxes are expected to grow relatively rapidly, about 27%, and they represent about 97% of the total growth over that period. Motor vehicle-related taxes and fees are actually projected to decline slightly over the forecasted period, and rental car surcharges are expected to grow by 22%, or a total of $28 million. And congratulations, you made it through. That is all I have for you today, members. Hopefully that gives you some helpful background on what the committee does, the kinds of bills you may see, and how the major revenue streams are funded. Mr. Chair, I know that was a lot of information, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Berg. That was a great presentation, just enough high level and weeds sprinkled in. So I think, but thank you for that. We do have some questions. Representative Valdez, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your you presented so well and very engaging. I appreciate that. I have a couple of questions. I was wondering, in 2021, Representative Payne added the proposed bill that I gave in 2020 about the tax absorption policy to help small businesses or businesses in general. I was wondering how has that impacted the businesses? And if you don't have the answer to that now, that's okay. I understand, because this is really something specific. So I just wanted to see what the trend has been.
Ganesh.
So the short version is, I don't know how much information we're going to have about that.
Gotcha.
At some point, I would imagine the Department of Revenue will have some feel for that, because that's really something that's going to be more self-reported and may not even come up until you're getting into audits, quite frankly, because it's a matter of whether or not they were collecting and remitting, or then they were absorbing and paying. And at this point, I don't think there's been any formal reporting on that I'm aware of.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Payne. Chair McClain, question about the Hillsborough County failed and challenged and failed transportation tax. How do you see the process, and being new to this committee and things like that, what do you think the process is going to be for ensuring that the dollars collected by the taxpayers of Hillsborough County for the transportation that failed, and how do you foresee that money being dispersed?
You're recognized.
So I'm going to preface this by saying that's going to be a policy call, but it is something that I would not be surprised if it comes up in this committee. So just to real quickly give you guys a little bit of background, if this is not something you're familiar with, Hillsborough County in 2018 passed a transportation surtax of 1% that went into effect in January of 2019. That was collected for a little over 2 years before the Supreme Court found that the underlying tax was unconstitutional. I believe at this point that those funds are being held by the Department of Revenue in a trust fund. My recollection is that at the end of last session, there was some move to maybe try to appropriate them in some way, but I imagine that will be a policy call far above my pay grade this year.
Representative Caruso, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation and your work on the committee, for the committee. I'm looking at one of the last slides you showed, and it had to do with state transportation trust funds, revenue sources, and I was curious to see that the fuel tax continues to climb as we continue to move towards electric vehicles, and I was wondering what your thoughts were on how we are going to eventually replace that fuel tax as a result of the conversion of vehicles to EV.
Ms. Berg, I'll help you with that one. I think that's a policy. It's going to be a policy question. However, certainly we can think about declining revenues and all those types of things that relates to gas tax. I think it's for me personally, I think it's something that we need to probably think about sooner than later. So, yes, sir. Let's see. Representative Daly, did you? Okay. You were just giving me a hi-ho. Thank you. Good to see you this morning. I got Representative Smith, Hart, and then Escamani. Representative Smith, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, but my question was the same as Representative Caruso on the electric vehicles. And I sure like, I know it's a policy question, but maybe an intangible tax or something along those lines. But for those that drive Teslas and that business, but we'll do that another day.
Thank you. Representative Hart, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering about the real estate piece. I see a decline. Do we have any idea what that looks like in money when we talk about 35%? Because that directly impacts the Sadowski Housing Trust Fund, of course, and that's a major concern for me.
You're recognized.
So what I'm going to say is those numbers are knowable. I do not have them with me today. I also want to mention that all of these are based on the August 22 General Revenue Estimating Conference. And my guess is, I believe, there's going to be a new round of those conferences starting pretty soon so that you guys have updated numbers for budgetary purposes. So while we can try to follow up and see if we have some information on that, I might hold off and see what it's looking like in a few weeks.
Representative, Ranking Member Escamani.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thanks so much, Ms. Berg, for a great presentation. I do have more than one question, but I'll go to the chair to do that. I first just real quick on the revenue forecasting, general revenue alongside Educational Enhancement Trust Fund of Florida Lottery. I noticed there is a dip being predicted right now for the next year. Is the REC predicting a recession? Like, where does that dip come from? I'd love some insight to that.
All right, I'm gonna try to do this. I'm gonna be honest. It is not something I feel strongly that I have all of my arms around because it's a little complicated. But I think a lot of what we're looking at here is the last 2 years we had really just unprecedented growth, and especially in sales tax, as you saw. And I think a lot of this is more just a reset to a more normal baseline as people are going back to pre-pandemic spending habits. We don't have as much of the stimulus funding coming in from the federal government. People are starting to go out and spend more money on non-taxable services, getting their haircuts or that sort of thing. Right. So I think rather than a recession, it's more kind of a reset as we get back to a more normal spending pattern, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Chair, may I?
You're recognized.
Thank you. That's a comforting answer, for sure. I also thought maybe it was federal revenue stimulus, so you're affirming that for me. Okay, excellent. For the two of the tax credit programs that you mentioned, specifically New Worlds and Strong Families, are they hitting their caps? And are all of our tax credit programs hitting their caps? Could you speak a little more to their usage? And do we know who uses them as well?
Recognize.
All right, so there's a lot going on there. So I'll try to go in steps. We do get monthly updated reports from the Department of Revenue indicating how many of these credits have been requested. So this is, again, a little bit in the weeds, but for a lot of these credit programs that have caps, there's kind of a multi-step process where someone who wants to participate in the program will apply to the Department of Revenue for what's called an allocation, saying, I want to participate, I'm planning to make a contribution, but I want to make sure there's still credit left. DOR would then approve that, and then at some point they make the contribution, and then once they've made the contribution, that becomes the credit that they could then take against the taxes. So really what we're getting in real time is more an allocation report, if that makes sense. I believe the most recent allocation report we had was that for this year, both Strong Families and the New Worlds are getting close to or approaching the cap. Some of the other programs, it kind of depends year to year. Some we hit every year. Brownfields, for example, we hit almost every year. There's a rollover and a backlog. Community contributions, some year might be a little bit below. It really depends on the program. You ask kind of who's participating. You mean what kind of taxpayers are participating? That's a great question. I don't get that breakdown in those reports. I do know that these programs, the ones that are against multiple taxes, can be taken against corporate income tax, insurance premium tax, direct pay sales tax, severance taxes, and then alcoholic beverage and tobacco taxes. And some of them, I think, tend to skew heavily one way or the other. I don't know if it's the specific breakdown for any of these right now.
Chair, may I?
One more. No. Yes, you're recognized.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That's a great breakdown. I appreciate the insight. Going back to the general revenue history and forecast, I did notice that the corporate income tax collection is increasing a little bit, and I'm assuming it's one reason why is that the rate's going back to 5.5, and we have not decoupled from most of the base broadeners in the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Could you just clarify that for me, and where is that slight increase coming from on the revenue forecast for CIT?
You recognize.
If I could do that, you have no idea how much money I can make in the private sector. The short version is corporate income tax is like super complicated, as you know. I am sure some of this is related to Tax Cuts and Jobs Act issues, things we have decoupled from or haven't decoupled from. Some of this, I think a lot of it, is genuinely growth in corporate income tax revenues over the same period. And then, as you've noted, obviously, the rate, which was temporarily reduced as a immediate reaction to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, has gone back to its standard 5.5% at this point. But the specifics of, oh, it's this one piece, is a lot harder than you think it is, and I promise we spend a lot of time thinking about it.
Chair, may I?
Yes, you're right. I will comment on that, because I have seen a few reports of, so because of some of the decoupling, it has increased the corporate tax gross amount that's coming in. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, you're recognized.
Thanks so much, Chair. For Senate Bill 50, the online sales tax collection bill, can you just remind us as members? My understanding is that its first collection went towards an unemployment trust fund post the pandemic to provide that tax break to businesses. And then it was shifting to the BRT. So as of today, is the BRT now less than it was, you know, on the chart of the past 4 years?
Recommend.
So all of those facts are reasonably accurate, yes. SB 50, for those of you who may remember, was like the online sales tax bill a few years ago. And basically what that was doing was just providing some parity for businesses from in-state versus out-of-state businesses. As you may recall, there was a period where you could order things from Amazon or other online retailers. And when it was shipped into Florida, they likely weren't collecting sales taxes, especially if it was through the marketplace feature. This was meant to just really create parity. So all of those marketplace facilitators and remote sellers that have significant sales into the state are now required to collect and remit that same sales tax that everybody else does to the department. The piece that went with that at the time was in the pandemic, there was a lot of concern about, because of the increase in unemployment, there was a huge hit to the Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund, which in turn was going to mean all the small businesses in the state of Florida were going to have much bigger bills when it came time to pay their unemployment compensation taxes. So the original plan for the bill was that those funds were going to be used to help kind of replenish that unemployment compensation trust fund to try to help businesses keep their normal bill during that period. And then once that trust fund was back to pre-pandemic levels, that was going to transition to a business rent tax. That is the bill that was passed. At this point, last I saw, we are still making distributions to the Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund. I think the most recent estimate over the summer was sometime in mid-2024, there might be a switch, at which point the business rent tax would be reduced to, I believe it's 2%.
And then, Chair, I just have one more question, I promise.
I did?
Oh. I have one more.
One more. I have, because I do have a couple other members that have questions.
Excellent. My last question is, and thank you, Ms. Berg, for the great insight. For our reliance on sales tax, do you have any insight to just the comparison of that to other states? And just in case, for context for members, sales tax has a lot of pros and cons, but it is a regressive tax. And though our tourism economy can also alleviate who pays it, everyday consumers pay it as well. So I am curious, just Florida compared to other states, how are other states as reliant as we are, or is that unique to us because we don't have an income tax?
You reckon it.
I think you kind of answered your own question there at the end. I have not done a 50-state survey, and I do not know for sure how much our percentage relies on sales tax compared to other states. But as you pointed out, we do not have a personal income tax, and that is a huge benefit to Floridians, and the trade-off is, to some extent, sales tax.
Representative Banks, and you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And you may have already answered this, but back in the between 2019 and then our spike up in 2022 with our revenue, what's the main economic driver for that? Is it the hot housing market? Is it sales tax, as you mentioned? And is that because of the open for business policies that we've had here in Florida?
So you're asking kind of what led to that spike? I don't know for sure. Some of it is, of course, going to be the housing market. Housing values did increase significantly. There were a lot of sales happening, so documentary stamp and intangible taxes were higher than expected. Sales taxes were much higher than expected as people were doing a lot of online shopping from home. but also, probably some of it is related to the fact that our businesses were open and operating. I can't speculate how much was any one thing.
Representative Whip LaMarca, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to do my best to make this a question because I do have a question at the end of it, but to address ranking member's question that House Bill 15 was passed under Senate Bill 50, I was privileged to go along for the ride with Speaker Pro Tem Clemens on that bill, and very important, and I just got this data today with respect to those numbers. We went down under $1 billion in trust fund dollars. Prior to the pandemic, it was about a little over $4 billion. The estimation, and they shared that with me earlier, just so everybody knows, is about April 2024, it should click over to the business rent tax going down by 700% from 5.5% to 2%. I personally think we should try to, once that happens, rid our state of that terrible tax as well. But my question to you then is, from the standpoint of your projections, if that's the time, it's April 2024, have you forecast that transition, those dollars? And I guess the other question along with that, and you get them both, is we have a very, we have an amazingly competent data research team here. And over the last year or so, because of issues that have been talked about, whether it's housing starts or people moving here, sales tax, can you give us an idea of when we would be able to better estimate those transitions to Florida and those sales tax dollars? In other words, which is a good thing, I guess the point is the distance of what, or the amount that ADR has been off by, has been anywhere from $250 million to $750 million in a monthly number. So that's good because it's more than we expected. But can you maybe address that, and also how you project once the 5.5 goes to 2%?
You recognize.
I'm going to attempt it. So in terms of the forecasting for that switch, I believe as part of the revenue estimating conferences forecasting, in addition to looking at when the Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund should get back to that threshold, I believe they are factoring in the corresponding reduction on their sales tax collections. Does that sound right? Okay. And just to remind you, I believe there's a 60-day delay between when that trigger is hit, when the trust fund hits its threshold, and then when the corresponding reduction in the business rent tax happens, just to give businesses enough time to kind of implement it, give them some warning, that kind of thing. So if it hits in April, sounds like it would be maybe a June reduction. I think that's what the most recent estimate showed, was a reduction starting in June. And I'm sorry, I have already forgotten the second half of your question.
No problem. Thank you, Chair. So the second question was really, again, and I think they do an amazing job in data research, but we've been off by $250 million thankfully on the plus side, just because I don't know if you can estimate how many people have packed their families up and their businesses and moved to, you know, preferably South Florida, but anywhere in Florida.
So forecasting is not a perfect art. I'll start with that. And I will mention that while you are right, the collections have come in well above expectation in sales tax, for example. You may also have noticed that the expectations for the collections for doc stamps are a little below what we were expecting. Those get updated as part of the estimating conference process. So when the revenue estimating conference and the estimating economic conferences meet over the next couple of months and update those forecasts, that also gets translated into those monthly forecasts where they try to figure out when stuff is coming in. In terms of how they're hitting or not hitting, I can tell you they're doing the best they can, but I think there's some element of it's better to aim a little low and have extra than the reverse from a budgetary perspective. And all of those are, of course, part of the planning and budgeting process. The goal is to help all of you know how much you can spend in any given year. So I think they try to be a little conservative if necessary. That way it gives you good wiggle room at the end rather than bad.
Thank you.
Members, that was everybody that I had. Anybody else? Any other questions? Any other questions? Okay, seeing none. Ms. Berg, thank you so much. That was a great presentation, and certainly members, thank you for your questions on that. This concludes our committee agenda for today. Members, we will not be meeting next week. However, I think you need to be prepared to get strapped in the next weeks after that. We'll start getting a lot of, some bills are going to start being filed and some of that stuff, and certainly we'll have a lot of work to do. Again, thank you for your questions, your patience, your attention to the presentation today. And with that, Representative Valdez moves we rise. Without objection, show the meeting adjourned.